Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning, welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. Got Julian Paul here live as usual.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about science in all its different forms as we do every Saturday morning between 11 and 12. Later in the show, we've got RPG. I think he's going to be talking about threads. Yeah, 40 years since that was released, and it is Sheffield-based, of course. And this week, our guest speaker is Phil Moffat from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society. He couldn't be with us last week, and Ogo can't be with us this week, so it's been a bit of a mixed bag for this month. He's going to be talking about all sorts, but we've asked him specifically to talk about Steve. And it's not a person, it's a strong thermal emission velocity enhancement. They'll also be covering the auroras that happened
in
our
air.
It's been an exciting week for all of us. Next week, Gareth is away. Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. He's away, so Chris Dale's stepping into his slot. He's going to be talking about dairy allergies. He's going to be talking about the junk food ban. He's going to be talking about lots of other bits and pieces that have been in the news recently about allergies and what's in our foods. And as another strange turn to the month of October, the last Saturday of the month would normally be Chris's slot, but he's jumped out of that slot and Paddy Vessey's jumped in. He's a fellow presenter here at Sheffield Live on presents The Back Room on Thursday evening 6 till 7. He's going to be talking a bit about his day job and he's going to be covering mental health, all good stuff. Before I forget, Sheffield Photographic Society have got their Perspectives exhibition in the Winter Gardens, Sheffield Winter Gardens, starting 12 noon on Friday the 1st of November, and it runs until 3 p.m. on Sunday the 10th of November. It's free, it's great stuff. You'll see a range of prints in all covering all manner of topics, and it's not that far away when you think about November. Next up, a reminder of another survey.
Yes, this is the huge RHS Climate Change Survey. a new RHS project with the Universities of Sheffield and Reading is asking gardeners to share experiences of how climate change is affecting plants and gardening habits. RHS PhD student Ellie Klemleski has developed a survey to gauge how gardening is changing and which plants are proving the most resilient.
And it certainly is changing. And that, I think that survey runs until, is it the 15th
yes.
of October? So you've not got long left to take part if you want to.
So go to the rhs.org.uk/climate change survey.
Yeah. Next up, a couple of books. Well, it's coming up to Christmas, so you might want to have a think about these.
Don't we know it?
England, A Natural History by John Lewis Stemple. Lewis Stemple's latest work on natural history surveys 12 English locations from the Thames Estuary and Richmond Park to North Yorkshire and the Lake District. While the author's focus is nature, whether it's the biology of ragworms or the elusiveness of otters, his scope is wide-reaching, encompassing history, culture and language. You can learn about the derivation of words, the impact of the Industrial Revolution and the significance of Norse mythology. So that's England and Natural History by John Lewis Stemple, out now. Another book that's out as well, A Book of Noises. So it's called Book of Noises, Notes on the Auriculus by Casper Henderson. Now, auriculus is a term coined by the author Casper Henderson to encapsulate the wonder of sounds around us, from the cosmic and the natural to human-made. Beginning with the Big Bang, Casper Henderson, the author, embarks on a fascinating journey through almost every type of noise imaginable. Thought that was an interesting one. A couple of books there. Next up is a story that might interest our Phil and lots of other people amongst you who are into running. I saw this and I thought this is a fantastic story, not least because it has connections to Sheffield as well. And this was in the National Press. So it was titled, It's 9 a.m. It's Saturday. Apart from it's not 9 a.m, it's just past 11. It's Saturday. This must be Park Run. Quote, it's like a drug, you just can't stop. So 20 years ago, on a windy autumnal Saturday morning, 13 runners showed up to a park in southwest London for an event called the Bushy Park Time Trail. A 5-kilometre course was plotted, and the organiser, Paul Sinton Hewitt, who was a computer programmer who grew up in South Africa, bought washers from a hardware store to hand out as finish tokens. The times were tapped up on a laptop afterwards in a local Cafe Nero. So this Saturday, the weather hadn't much improved when this article was written. This Saturday, the weather hadn't much improved, overcast with the sun straining to peek through, and the venue was the same. Picturesque Bushy Park with its resident red deer squaring up ready to rut. But pretty much everything else about the impromptu get-together has evolved. So since 2008, it has been known as Park Run, and there are now 2,500 weekly events, which are all 5 kilometres long, all free, in 22 countries, everywhere from the slopes of Mount Etna to 25 UK prisons to the Falkland Islands. So it's amazing. In a typical week, around 350,000 people will take part. And Runners World hails it as a global phenomenon. So at Bushy Park, just under 2,000 turned up for last weekend's anniversary. Park Run's regular roll call includes Olympians and a 100-year-old man in New Zealand who has notched up more than 175 runs, and everyone in between all that as well. So and for that event, when they were doing the anniversary event, Paralympian swimmer Ellie Simmons was volunteering at Bushy Park, and one of the runners was Richard Fletcher, a local who did his first run in January 2006 and on Saturday completed his 800th event. So once you get started, once you're hooked, it's like a drug, you can't stop. So says one of the participants, Richard Fletcher, with a broad grin after crossing the line. Every Saturday at 9 a.m, wherever I am in the world, I'm going to try to do a park run. So it's interesting, you don't even have to be at home, you don't have to go to the same one all the time, just go to another one that's organised in another place. And This Richard Fletcher says, I've done one in Krakow. I was in Helsinki. I did one there. I was in Namibia. I just showed up and the guys were superb. He says, we start, we finish, and we all have a bit of banter at the end of it. It's superb community spirit. So the 64-year-old guy, Paul Sinton Hewitt, who set all this up, was awarded a CBE in 2014. He was also back at Bushy Park for the anniversary event, although he wasn't running because he's got arthritis in his left knee now. But he's saying, as well as the physical benefits of walking or running 5 kilometres each week, he says that the reason parkrun has chimed with so many people is the boost it gives to mental health. He said, I've always had issues with mood swings, and I knew that mentally I needed running to keep the boat afloat, so to speak. So I figured the best thing I could do was start this event, and I'd see my mates every weekend. 10 years later, it was clear that it had been my secret weapon, my little pill I took every single week weekend, which helped. He said, it didn't fix me because I'm still flawed, but it helped me address the ups and downs, which I thought was incredibly interesting. And the article said, recent research from Sheffield Hallam University and the University of Sheffield seems to enforce Paul Sinton Hewitt's point of view. The six-month study, which looked at 548 newly registered park runners, as they're called, and used the UK Office for National Statistics metrics for measuring well-being, showed life satisfaction increased after doing just 2 park runs. During COVID, life satisfaction went down by 0.4 in the UK population, if you look at the ONS data. And that's according to Professor Steve Hake from Sheffield Hallam University's Advanced Wellbeing Research Centre. After parkrun, life satisfaction went up by 0.25. So he says that gives them a feeling for how powerful something like parkrun is. On his final note, Professor Steve Hake from Sheffield Hallam University's Advanced Wellbeing Research Centre said, I work mostly in public health, and I can't think of any public health initiative in the UK as large as parkrun. And I thought that's fantastic.
Confidence is a preference for the habitual voyeur of what is known as. A morning suit can be avoided if you take a route straight through what is known as. John Scott Brewer's crew, he gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons. They love a bit of him. Who's that gut lord marching? You should cut down on your pork life, mate. Get some exercise. Get up when I want, except on Wednesdays when I get rudely awakened by the dustman. I put my trousers on, have a cup of tea, and I think about leaving the house. I feed the pigeons, I sometimes feed the sparrows too. It gives me a sense of enormous well-being.
Great track there by Park Life, of course, Blur. Park Life with Phil Daniels on vocal. And we played that because we talked about the benefits of park run.
That
amazing.
Was 1994,
though. I know.
Brilliant.
Yikes. If you just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, talking about science in all its different forms. Next up, it's this week's environment update.
Yes. I was just thinking about something else, but anyway, climate change. Antarctica is turning green with vegetation at an astounding rate, according to scientists at the University of Exeter, who said that the growth in mosses, lichen and grasses across the frozen continent was a clear indication of climate change. And before we go on, Julie told me that the driest place on Earth is...
Oh, it's Antarctica.
Believe it or not.
Yeah,
not
I read that.
Not Africa.
No, the driest... inhabited place is Australia. I think. Yeah. Oh, you caught me out there. Next up, turtles. Conservationists in Greece are celebrating after a resurgence in numbers of the Caretta sea turtle. I think it's a loggerhead type of sea turtle, which was previously on the verge of extinction. The Sea Turtle Protection Society of Greece said that throughout the 2000s, they saw annual declines of about 6% on Crete, for example. But as a result of their sustained conservation efforts over the decades, they were now seeing a dramatic increase in nest numbers. All good stuff.
This next one.
Artificial intelligence.
I know, but how did they work this out?
Well, it's a very interesting fact, right, isn't it?
Well, the huge computer clusters powering ChatGPT need four times as much water to deliver answers when previously thought, according to research by the University of California. Using a chatbot for between 10 to 50 queries is thirsty work, consuming about 2 litres of water.
And, you know, we're talking about the driest place on Earth. One of the other questions was, why is China so dependent on Tibet? And it's for water.
For water.
I'm sure RPG will have something to say about that as well. Anyway, we deviate yet again. But anyway, electric vehicles. This is another one, a very interesting one from my point of view. The number of public charging stations in the UK has increased by 41% in the past year. But get this, it's not all that good news. The spread is uneven, and the southeast of England now has nearly half of all the UK's chargers. So that's a big issue, isn't it, moving forward? Next up,
pine martens. The animals are being released at secret locations across Dartmoor, returning the pine martin to the southwest of England for the first time in more than a century. The animals have been absent from areas since the late 19th century after habitat loss and hunting drove their numbers down. The second phase of the project will see another group of the animals released in Exmoor in 2025.
And continuing the animal thing, bisons. Construction is underway on a network of bison bridges in Kent, which will allow the animals to travel between previously separated parts of their habitats. A new herd of bison was introduced into the West Blean and Thorndon Woods Nature Reserve in 2022 to act as natural rewilders, boosting biodiversity and helping to cultivate the landscape. The bison bridges will allow the bison to roam 200 hectares of land, four times the area that's available to them at the moment.
Next, battery storage, or BESS, B-E-S-S, the UK's largest battery energy storage system, or BESS, has gone live in North Yorkshire at Lakeside Energy Park. It is a 100
megawatt, I think.
Yeah, 100 megawatt facility in Drax near Selby, which can provide power to about 30,000 homes a day across England and Wales. Battery energy storage systems, BESS's, are used to store energy from renewables like solar and wind, and then release it when the power is needed most. When the sun is shining and the wind is blowing and there is excessive supply, the batteries soak that energy up and store it. And then at a later time, the energy is released to provide round-the-clock renewable energy.
Yeah, it's all, the key is round-the-clock renewable energy. It's how you store it from when you need it. Interesting. So that's probably a word, an acronym you're going to hear more and more moving forward. BESS, Battery Energy Storage System. Finally, sewage. Kite surfers on Yorkshire's east coast say the water quality is so poor that people are getting ill. Yorkshire Water operates several overflow pipes along the coast and is legally permitted to discharge sewage into the North Sea during heavy rainfall. The Yorkshire Bathing Water Partnership said it had carried out an initial investigation and was working as a matter of urgency to ensure the community gets the beach environment it deserves. The partnership, which includes Yorkshire Water, East Riding of Yorkshire Council and the Environment Agency, said the predominant bacteria it had found had come from birds. It said 230 water and 48 sand samples have been collected and analysed between July and September. The partnership said a number of actions are already under consideration, including management of beach wash-ups, such as seaweed and shellfish, as well as an assessment of water company storm overflows.
Started with a ghost land, eventually
Interesting track there. I'm sure our PG is going to love that one. Tested Waters by Lupe, 2024. We played that on Glory Days, I reckon, as one of his tracks.
Yes, we did.
Played that because we were talking about kite surfers on Yorkshire's East Coast are unhappy with the quality of the water, the sewage being put into the sea. All good stuff. You're of course listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG. Oh, hang on. Where are you?
Hello.
Oh, hello. It could be I've not plugged you in properly. Your battery's running low. The benefits or the beauty of live radio, Paul. Things go wrong and things will go wrong.
Cool, amazing.
Sure. But you're here now. We've got you. We've got it. Fantastic. So what's caught your eye in the science news this week then?
Well, I thought one of the things that caught my eye was the Nobel Peace Prize for this year.
Yes.
Which has been awarded to the group that honours the atomic bomb survivors from the two atomic bombs dropped at the end of the Second World War by America on Japan. So that's been awarded to the Nihon Hidankyo.
Well done, Paul. Well done.
Yep. it sort of triggered a thought, because I'd noticed a few days ago now they did a late night re-showing of the atomic sort of story in Sheffield that was called Threads.
Yeah.
And so I sat in just last night and watched it again.
Oh.
So I thought it's very interesting, the parallels to the world at present, even though it's 40 years ago. 1984 it was out. Barry Hines authored and did the script. And it was filmed in and around Sheffield with footage from some of the tests. Bombs that had been set off that they exposed different structures and things to. So in the build-up, they're talking about Iran and the possibility of a war in the Middle East. America get involved, Russia involved in a way. So the same sort of players around, and the thing starts off with an incident, supposedly of a lost submarine, an American submarine. The blame's then put on to Russia for the loss of this submarine, and it escalates through. And early on, there's talk about a battlefield tactical atomic weapon. So that was the first signs, I think, around that time of saying, well, you could have a small atom bomb and it wouldn't be as bad. But if you want to watch Threads, it talks about Sheffield. I think at that time, Sykes is the fourth largest city in the UK, and says about the background of engineering and steel making and the importance of such a city. And as this thing escalates, then we start to see the civil defence unfold. What do we do? And I think some sites, if you're a Sheffielder, looking at the old egg box, and a lot of people will know that building, and There was a lot of controversy when it was first built.
Indeed, I worked in it, so...
Both worked in it.
Yeah, so I've been in and out there a few times, visiting different departments for different things, so interesting. And you then sort of get into 40 years ago, what would happen for civil defence, and the city's chief executive would have gone off to supposedly an underground facility, which turned out to be more like a basement, and telephones and things trying to coordinate, and a radio system trying to communicate.
Yeah, because there wouldn't have been any internet and, you know, computers and stuff. You know, they weren't just coming in, weren't they? Really mainstream.
Yeah.
That's right. It sort of predates that. And when you look back at the quality of things like the ambulances that were turning out, that were all sorts of ages and shapes and sizes, and basically what happens is this thing escalates to the point where Russia supposedly explodes an atomic bomb close to Sheffield. And it's... a study of the outcome of that, and it's kind of a critique, I think, at the time of a lot of the advice around an atomic attack goes back to the 50s, and it's things like duck and cover, the thing that they used to promote in the United States. If a bomb goes off near you, duck down and cover your head. That's going to do a lot of good.
Or you could be like Harrison Ford and go in the fridge with a lead lining. Well, maybe emerge either lead poisoned or, you know, the only person left alive.
Well, I think the thing with threads, it successfully shredded those kind of thoughts. I think if you look at the progress of things and how we cope with it. And some of the facts that were coming out 40 years ago, they say it's an 80 megaton weapon that's exploded near Sheffield, but there were several through the country, and they were saying how few really of these devices. I think they eventually had a sort of a crossfire between Russia and America that yielded 3,000 megatons. Of exploding atomic weapons. But 80 megatons near Sheffield said pretty much there weren't any windows left in the city.
Mm.
So if you were duck and cover, or even if you took the internal doors off and made a little lean-to shelter inside your house, it wasn't an awful lot of good. And it sort of shone through, and then it showed what our preparedness would be in such an event. And
I would think pretty unprepared.
it's very, very low level. I mean, it kind of looked pale by comparison with how things got together in the Second World War.
Yeah.
So, we're still reliant on telephones for contact and radio and... Yeah, I think it's sort of trying to check out what was happening, but immediately within a week there were shortages of food, water, medical sort of facilities and aid were in short supply, and they said, again, something we've heard a lot of recently, the NHS totally overwhelmed by events. Short of everything that they needed to try and treat the casualties from this nuclear explosion. So, and sadly, it stretches on through basically another generation in the storyline, where a young lady who's pregnant when the bomb goes off finds her way out of the city and tries to get along, and has her baby in the wilds in difficult circumstances, and that baby grows up to lose her mother at the age of 10 and then becomes pregnant herself, and that is the parting sort of image of the Threads film. And I say, if you actually have a look at the city, you can see the state of play of various things, but no real sort of preparation for the localised government and control centres that supposedly are in place now. But quite often you see the Cold War bunkers that were built are being sold off and being turned into trendy new housing and things now.
Yeah, so, but it's an interesting one, Paul, because we worked for the council for a very long time, so we worked in the egg box. So yeah. when we've watched Threads, that's my first thought. It's like, oh my word, I remember those windowsills because of how it was built, yeah. Really big windowsills. But later, we were still at the council when we had the really bad flood in 2007. Mm. And, you know, a lot of our directors and, you know, chief exec, my words, they were like, had to put in action all these plans that they yep. obviously talked about. I mean, it's not on the same scale as atomic bomb, but it was a massive, when we got the floods and places in Sheffield were cut off, people couldn't get home, people couldn't get, if some people died and they couldn't, you know, you couldn't get anybody to them. And
yeah,
and I remember them saying, one of our directors saying, we all had to put all these plans into action. We had all these like gold, silver, this is what we needed to do, and who had to call yeah. who, and who had, and it was a massive stress, you yeah. know, to take that on, really. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at dealing with a massive event like that, the number of casualties meant that you couldn't bury people. So, the details of advising people to wrap bodies up, keep them in the house, yeah. and if they go beyond a few days, move them outside, cover them up, mark the site, yeah, and... you know, then the normal things that happen with the normal sort of scale of death that we face are just totally overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, that's, again, spreads disease. So,
yeah.
again, you can
public
look at
health,
the mirror image that we see in the world today. You know, places flattened, places without resources to support the populations decimated. Hopefully, they're not going to continue to be decimated by illness because of the lack of facilities and things. So it's very thought-provoking. And I say, for 40 years ago, there are a lot of things that chime with the current day.
Yeah, indeed.
So I think, I know I'm going to be pushed for time, so I'll tell you the second thing that I got in mind after Threads was something you've touched on, artificial intelligence.
Yeah,
and another Nobel Prize, the joint winner in chemistry is Demis Hassabis, who's was the chief executive of Google's DeepMind. He's a British computer scientist, a professor, and he won a share of the Nobel Prize for chemistry for revolutionary work on proteins. So he co-founded the artificial intelligence company DeepMind, and they worked from an early sort of stage looking at proteins as the building blocks of life, because they're found in every cell in our bodies. And understanding proteins has driven great breakthroughs in medicine, and it's being used to solve the antibiotic resistance and image of enzymes that can decompose plastics to help with plastic pollution. So great spin-offs from that sort of background. And again, a very sort of worthwhile Nobel Prize winning of it. But looking at artificial intelligence, hopefully I'll come back with another thing on it. I just got a wonderful book that I'm starting to read, which I'll talk about, called Waves. And this is really looking at artificial intelligence and where it can go, what it can do, and what the costs costs will be to society. Basically saying that it'll take over some of the work roles that human beings do. Don't think that it's going to be slow as applying robotics to lift the workload from human beings. So it's something that's evolving very quickly, very fast, and it's impacting on things, as you said, data centres. Well, we just got £8 billion sort of investment flagged up in the UK for the Amazon data centres that are proposed to be built here. And the thing with the water is a lot of these things use high-density computing and they use water cooling.
Indeed.
So the sort of side effects and spin-offs of these things can be quite amazing. But I'll say this thing in terms of medicine and in terms of developing new things, like they've used amino acids to design a new protein, which opens the door to creating new proteins, which can be used in pharmaceuticals, vaccines and other tools. So it's an interesting area of work, but it's coming out of the sort of artificial intelligence background. And Demis Hassabis was a child prodigy. He's a Greek Cypriot and Singaporean parents. And he was a chess prodigy. He was a grandmaster at the age of 13. He did his A-levels at the age of 16. And was asked by Cambridge University to take a gap year before he started at the university because he was so young. And after graduating in computer science, he worked in computer game design, which again, Sheffield's got great links with games designing for computing. Completed his PhD at University College London and then went on to work at several US universities. In 2010, he co-founded a machine learning company, DeepMind, that Google bought up in 2014. So the future fast catching up with its recent past, I think. So,
good stuff. Great stuff, Paul. So we'll look forward to more from you on that, from your book of waves.
Yeah, it's looking like a very interesting read. So I'll try and distill it down into something that we can do in a short programme.
Amazing. Great stuff, Paul. Thank you, Paul. Shall speak to you on Monday on the Glory Days Rock Show.
I shall look forward to it.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Paul. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
great track as well. That's Atomic by Blonde Day, because RPG was talking about the 40th anniversary of the film Threads, which was based in Sheffield. All interesting stuff. You're of course listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms. We have Mr. Full Muffet on the line. Yes, let's have a bit of space trucking, Phil. Come on. Are you there?
Good morning.
Oh, you are there. You are there.
Wiki, wiki.
Can you hear us? Can we hear you?
Yes, I can hear. Yes.
Excellent. The wonders of modern technology and mobile phones. Because you've sprained your ankle, haven't you? So you're not running today.
No, unfortunately not. It's healed. It's on the mend.
It's on the mend.
Great. They said at least they said 4 weeks to 6 weeks.
Oh, dear. Not good, is it?
It's not, especially when you're training to do a half marathon as well.
Dear me.
I've had to cancel that.
Oh, my word. Anyway, what an exciting week it's been for anybody who's interested in looking at the sky, and in particular, Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society, because I follow your Facebook page and it went bonkers the other night.
Oh, yeah. My smartphone's gone bonkers this week as well. Yes. The aurora were kind of predicted about 3 or 4 days ago. We had a lot of activity on the sun. There was X flares, M flares, C flares, all kinds of flares, all pointing our direction. And then it took about 3 days for all the energy to get to the Earth. And then suddenly I got home on Thursday, I'd been out, and I got a text, is it right? There's an aurora tonight. Flicked over to my aurora watch. I'd had it on silent. Flipping, everything's on red. Everything was on red. Crikey, blind. I went outside, the sky looked a bit dodgy. So anyway, I got my camera out and took an image. And fair enough, 8 o'clock, you could see the aurora. The aurora's better on the phone because the colours, the camera detector, the CCD chip, they've tuned them to give you better colours. So the greens I find really difficult to see, but the pinks and the reds are really, really easy to pick out.
So you're based in Rotherham. A lot of people got some great views from Hoyland, Swinton. Yes. I mean, I was in Sheffield and I failed miserably. And you're really disappointed with me, aren't you, Phil?
I'm very disappointed. Mick Nichols is in middle of Sheffield. He got some.
He did. He did. I'm jealous.
Over the top of the houses. It was a dead cert the other day.
Dead cert. So, you know, you talk about all the different flares, the X, the C. What's all that mean then? The power of them?
When these flares explode on the surface of the sun, they tend to link with sunspot activity. So when you get a lot of sunspots, you also get a lot of flares. So it's near maximum activity on the sun. So we've had some C flares and some M flares, which are the smaller flares. The X flares are the high category ones, which throw out a huge amount of energy. They don't always point towards the Earth, so we don't always get the energy. But these couple of flares went off. They can easily be seen in the X-ray vision. You can't see them in natural light. These are like X-rays. And you can see the flashes go off, and they were huge. Anyway, all this energy has been directed at the Earth, and then it hits the magnetic poles and the upper atmosphere and the thermosphere. And it just glows. It excites all the gases in the atmosphere, and that's where the glow comes from. So when you see lines and streaks in the aurora, they're the magnetic field lines you're actually seeing that's funneling the actual aurora particles through the Earth's atmosphere.
Amazing.
So if you see an aurora overhead, it forms like a crown, and they're called crown aurora. You also get veils as well. So if you see one in the distance, it'll look like a curtain, like a net curtain dancing about on the horizon. That's called a veil. It's all the same stuff. But I know your next question is going to be, so who's Steve?
Not yet. So we saw the pictures that I saw from some of your from yourself, there were some from Glenn, is there Marsden,
yes,
as well. Everybody's getting all sorts of different colours, not yes, just one colour. So yes, is that that's the different gases?
Well, yes. So it's mainly green. Then you get blues, purples, and you also get reds and pinks. And it all depends on the intensity and which type of gas it's exciting. So I know oxygen is green, and then the red is nitrogen, and then there's like sulfurs and phosphates and stuff. So there's blues and your purples. So, but the other thing is, depending whose phone you own, depends on the sensitivity of the colour.
It's very interesting that, yeah.
And not only that, I think some people then go into photo editing.
Of course.
And if it's faint, you can actually pull the colours out.
Yes, you can.
Using your filters on your phone. So I think some people might have enhanced photos as well.
No, well, Mick Nichols, to be fair, put his up and said, these are not processed pictures. I've tidied some, I think, I can't describe what he said, but he said, I've tidied something up, but I've yes, not changed the colours.
Yes,
ooh,
yes.
Controversial.
Because some people do. Well, it's the same with astrophotography. There's
it's
a big
true
thing now where people are taking images that you can't see. It's because the computer programming
brings
and processing in your laptop, you can bring out different features. So the yellows and the greens and the reds you see in nebulas, you just don't see them. But they are there if you focus on the different wavelengths of light. You can pull the different gases out of the clouds to see different colours. But it all depends why you're taking the photograph. If you're taking a pretty picture and it's just a pretty picture, do what you want with it. If you're taking a photograph and trying to represent real life, keep it as it is.
Ooh,
if you're doing
wise
science,
words, Phil. There.
If you're doing science and you specifically want to know stuff, this tool helps you identify things. It's because you can't see there's oxygen in a cloud or nitrogen,
no,
or hydrogen or helium. What you need to do is pick the wavelength to bring out the colour to detect what's there, but it all depends why you're taking the picture in the first place.
Fascinating.
So most people just try to represent what they can see.
On that note then, what do you honestly think is the best mobile phone then, in terms of quality of picture?
It depends who you talk to. It's like, do you get a Nikon or a Canon camera?
Yeah.
I mean, my mates are all Canons, but I do know another group that's all Nikon. So I like Apple iPhones. Some people won't touch Apple because of the marketing.
Yeah.
Personally, I like the Apple and I like the Hewlett-Packard stuff and all that, and it's interchangeable and you can use it. But you do get people that have got different brands and they'll go down
different
routes.
It's interesting. Go on.
But I like that. I mean, I'm on a smartphone, iPhone 12, and it's by far the best phone I've ever had. I'm taking photographs with my phone that blow me away. Now, it won't do certain things, and that's when you need... The planetary stuff is difficult because of the intensity of the light. However, the bright planets, that is. Jupiter is useless on my phone, but the moon's really good, and I've got stars. I've been following the T Corona Borealis star. I'm waiting for it to pop and go nova. But it's really, really good at that. It's a faint star, and I can see the faint stuff. If I get an image that's too bright, it just floods all the cells on the chip on the phone.
Interesting.
Now that's when you want a planetary CCD camera. You can shove in your eyepiece holder, plug it into your computer, and then you can alter all the gammas and all the intensities and all the brightness.
Wow. You know, you ought to go and write to Apple and say, "Look, us astronomers, we want you to like get your finger out and design us something better." So, what's a CCD? Is that the colour card?
Charge coupled device in your. You get like a little cylinder now, and what they do is they pop it, right, slide it in. Cable, in fact, some don't have cables now. They'll Bluetooth to your phone,
yes,
or they'll Bluetooth to your laptop. Most people plug them in using a cable, a USB cable. Then you have like a program on your computer like Cyril that'll actually edit, and it'll do a long exposure, and then it'll filter out all the... If you get a cloud come across, or something happens, or somebody shines a light, it'll filter all that out. Then you can, like, process your image. You can take the stars out, you can put stars in, you can, like, alter the brightness, the colouring. Oh, there's all kinds of things. It's endless. This is how you get these really fantastic photographs in these magazines. Whereas the professionals were doing it 20 years ago, the amateur market's now catching up.
Yes.
Where this kind of stuff, it's out there in the public domain, and it's affordable, yeah. And people can do this. Then you need a better telescope. Then you need a better mount.
Yeah.
Then you need better tracking.
Yeah.
Because it all gets the next level up.
Yeah, you're so, competing, aren't you?
Yeah, at the moment, I'm like iPhone user. To be honest, I like the images of the with the iPhone. At the moment, it's doing what I want to do.
For the time being.
The next stage is using
so
it. I've got some stuff on my laptop, but I'm struggling to use it.
For the Mexico International Medical Society, then, would you say that that was a fantastic aurora, you know what you
it
saw?
It was good. Yeah, to say it's this far south, it was good. But I'd say it was excellent if I hadn't have seen the other aurora earlier on this year.
Oh.
Because that was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, but we're lucky aren't we?
Yeah, if we get an aurora, we can get overhead here. It's fantastic no matter what. But the intensity of the previous one earlier on this year, it was just out of this world. I mean, it was huge. It was bigger than the one we had the other day.
Yeah.
But I'm not complaining.
No, you're not complaining.
And what I really, really think is absolutely fantastic, I've got girls and boys, and they were out taking photographs of the stars and the aurora with a whole range of phones.
Yes.
And I got people, how do I do this? How do I do that?
Which is
some
brilliant.
Of the results that have come in on Facebook are fantastic.
Yes, they are.
It's absolutely, it's kind of opened a window to everybody. Somebody said to me, I've completed my life now.
Oh, brilliant.
Because I've seen an aurora from home.
Hey, but you know, you went to Iceland, didn't you? Did you? I know I shouldn't mention this because Karamia's still getting over the fact it was 30 quid for a bottle of wine. But you went there, you saw, what did you see, Phil? Nothing.
We saw cloud and snow. we had a snowstorm for 3 days.
But
it was fantastic. So it was fantastic. Well, I went on my aurora app, and there's a camera in the Shetland Islands looking at the aurora over Iceland, so I could see the aurora on my phone that was happening from Green Shetland.
Yeah.
That was over
Iceland. But this is
it was ridiculous.
This is why people get excited, because some people can't travel to Iceland or whatever. So to have something they can see here, what everybody talks about. Some people who missed it, like me again.
Well, one of our members came back from Shetland yesterday, and he said they couldn't see anything because it was clouded out. So in
Good
South Yorkshire,
grief.
So he was in Shetland, aurora overhead, and he couldn't see it, and we're in South Yorkshire. So we were lucky. We were really, really lucky.
I think I was in the wrong bit of Sheffield because I couldn't believe it. And I'm like, well, we can't see it.
Well, can I just tell you something?
Sorry,
The greens looked like fog to me. It looked like light pollution.
Now,
it wasn't until I took a photograph.
Oh, I see.
The greens came out on the camera.
That's what I should have done.
The pinks and the reds looked like a fire. When I first saw the pinks and the reds, I was looking over my next-door neighbour's roof, and it looked like there was a fire in the back garden. That's the kind of colours it was. And then when I took a photograph, all the streaks came out in it, and I could see it was obvious it was an aurora. But with the naked eye, it is a bit tricky. But there again, different people have got different, how can I put it, abilities with their eyes.
Yes.
The colour index
isn't
the same for every human being.
No.
And somebody showed me a photograph of some orange and black and white lines and asked me what colours they were, and I thought the black was orange and the orange was black. and apparently it's a phenomena, but I thought they were pulling my leg. But anyway, yeah, not everybody sees colours in the same way.
Amazing. We've got about 5 minutes left, Phil.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Tell us about Steve.
Oh, Steve.
Steve.
Yes, the strong thermal emission
Velocity
enhancement.
It's only because you told me this morning.
I think somebody took a load of words and shoved them together to make a flipping acronym.
Exactly. So it's not somebody's mate, is it? So what's all that about? Because it is linked to auroras, isn't it?
Well, it is aurora. It's an auroral event. So like we said, you get corona aurora and veils that they also get what's called a ribbon. Now, this isn't a new phenomena, and it's nothing that's just happened. we just don't get them very often. So sometimes you get a ribbon of aurora, like literally like a ribbon running horizontally across the sky, and it's like a bit like a vortex. Now, I'm not sure how part of this upper atmosphere works, but when it's coming in, it's a bit like a jet stream where it's running horizontally rather than vertically, and it gets in kind of a vortex. So it's like running around like a pipe. And because it's in the same part of the atmosphere, you've got the same gases, it's exciting the gases. So you see a ribbon of aurora, and that's what it is.
So is that what Steve is then?
Yes.
So, well, who knew? We certainly didn't. Paul's going to ask him. Ask Phil. He'll know.
Yeah. So it's a bit like on the sun, when the solar flares come off, it's plasma because it's so hot. When these particles come into atmosphere, they're heated up and it makes the gas glow. So there's friction and heat. So it's not plasma, but it's a similar kind of effect where you can see things happening that you wouldn't see if it was cold. So it's a bit like the jet stream. You can't see jet stream unless there's something in the jet stream.
But like
this
dust.
This is a similar kind of stuff, yeah.
Like dust or smoke particles.
Well, that's the other thing. We've had some really, really orange sunsets, and it's all that, all the particles in the atmosphere in the west coming up from America.
Because really?
If you've noticed, there's been some really orange sunsets. It's the soot. It's the soot and the carbon in the atmosphere.
So we think it's something lovely, and it's actually pollution.
pollution
from America.
That's right. The other thing that causes that is volcanoes. When you get all the dust in the atmosphere, that can turn the atmosphere a different colour as well.
Wow! But go on.
And last night I was looking out for the new comet, Sutton-San. Which is just gone round the sun, and it's starting to rise in the west just after sunset. Last night, I couldn't see it the night before, but it might have been behind the cloud. So just after sunset, there's a comet going to start rising in the west after sunset.
Wow.
So watch out for like a streak of light across the sky.
So that's your next challenge. But as you say, hasn't it made people interested?
Yes,
in the sky, because it engages, it's like public engagement, isn't it?
Yes.
It's fascinating.
It's not a periodic comet. So can you remember we talked about comets and where they came from? So we've got the Kuiper belt around the outside of the solar system, and then we've got a halo around the solar system called the Oort cloud.
Yes.
We believe this comet has come out of the Oort cloud, it's been dislodged, and it's come round the sun. So I think it's the closest point to the Earth today as it's passing out of the solar system. It's going to start travelling out away from us after today, but it should be quite bright because the particles are lit up from the front by the sun. So we're hoping it's going to be really, really bright.
Brilliant.
It's got a really long tail as well.
I'm going to have to let you go, Phil, because we've got the film showing. Oh, my word. Can I just say, have you got your astronomy night at the Camellia House tonight? Wentworth Woodhouse?
Yes, we've got 40 people turning up.
Really? Are you going to be there? Are you going to be there?
Yes, I'm doing the talk.
Right.
Two lectures.
Excellent.
We've got about 12 people.
Sold out. You've sold out again. You need the T-shirts, Phil. You did promise. You're going to get some T-shirts made. Phil Muffet, Mexburn Swinton, Astronomical Society. Anybody's listening, you must follow them on Facebook if you want to see some great pictures. Have a great time, Phil. Thanks so much, as usual. Bye-bye, Phil. Bye.
Cheers, bye.